Some words on production, projects, and procrastination. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. During the short time that I worked at Cygnosis in 1995 to 1996, I was doing tech support, a little bit of hint book writing, but also I got to see what was being worked on in the real Cygnosis office over in England and which games were probably going to come out. Many of them did. By the time we saw them, they would be polished enough that they would be on finalized discs, and it was just a matter of waiting for Christmas to see what they would be. But other games came on different media, and we were just seeing them because, both for sales and development, we're trying to figure out if these were going to live and what would be happening with them. That's how, after work, I'd be in the conference room with Mark and Keith and many others, looking at games that had not been and might never be. Some of them were truly beautiful, obviously the work of folks who had spent months or years making them work. Some of them were barely functioning, just demos to prove a technology or a clever code hack could be possibly turned into an entire game. Those dice rolls, those rough ideas that we were able to look at, won my immediate approval. I was and am a fan of game making, being able to make a world that is smooth and beautiful and implies you have control, and by learning the skills of the game, you could become a winner. Every game, no matter what state it was in, got a thumbs up from me. There was one in particular, though, that haunts me. It was a game where you moved through tunnels inside of a ship, and these were all square 3D tunnels that was using a palette cycling trick to give an extra dimension of animation to the spaceship walls. I thought it was absolutely beautiful, and this is all in the era without 3D acceleration, so the code you saw was all being done by hand to make it as fast as possible. I thought this game was amazing, and I remember talking to my coworker about it, and he had a much darker opinion, which was, by the time this game ever came out, these tricks would already be commonplace, and so it was probably never going to be finished, polished, and released, because the time from the cool hack to being yesterday's news was just too long. And he's right. I've lost the name, I've lost who worked on it. All I remember is this beautiful idea that just fell over in the stampede of work. There was a game that Cygnosis came out with called Estatica, and while there was an Estatica 2, there was also a game being done in a cityscape location, and I got to play that beta. Time was not on its side, and it disappeared into the loam as well. I've thought about the fact that these represent just a small percentage of the games, creations, and demos that a games industry creates. It's one thing when people code little ideas or tricks or experiments just to understand how mechanics might work, whether they're trying to create a controllable drop of liquid or they're showing a spinning mechanic that lets you add another layer to the game. But sometimes you get entire games almost ready to go, and the most arbitrary reasons kill it forever. The Video Game History Foundation made me aware of the fact that in the case of Nintendo, there was such a rigorous quality process accepting games for their platform that they actually had a 2-game-per-company limit in some cases, and what this actually translated to was companies creating 4 to 6 games, hoping that 2 of them would get accepted. If you were accepted, it was fantastic. That game would be marketed, treated well by Nintendo, and it would sell, hopefully, very well. But if that game didn't get that approval, for simple reasons, it would have nowhere to go. There was no switching it over to a different platform, reusing the code, and just making it work. It was, in every way, an evolutionary dead end of a completely justified and beautiful piece of work, with all of the art, testing, and coding that the game that made it out into our minds and into history had gotten. This happens everywhere. There are movies, plays and musicals, toys, cars, motorcycles, tools, gadgets, and buildings that go through an entire process of design, ideas, refinement, and time, only to end up a pile of papers in a file folder inside of a designer's attic. We, as people looking through to the past, are fascinated that these exist. We love finding old prototypes or forgotten movie scripts or alternate scenes that were shot towards an idea that didn't make it through the editing phase. There's a sense of justice denied when you see something created by somebody who is incredibly well-beloved, but at the time never had their work done. It's an extra layer when it's an interpersonal situation, that somebody simply won't work with another person or another team because of some previous bad blood, and quality doesn't even come into it. In the realm of today, where gigabytes of file transfer mean nothing, where we're able to grab a stack of CDs of different concepts that never made it anywhere, put them up and make them easily viewable all around the world, the economics have completely changed about getting a glimpse about these alternate ideas. We have so many gifts come to us over a given time period, usually lauded with some sort of press interest, but sometimes simply dropping into our laps, finding out that there's an ISO of a CD game that never made it, or discovering a pile of papers that easily go through a sheet-fed scanner and show us exactly how a design was going to go, exactly how a character was going to look. We'll find source code files, one sheets, discarded box art, interviews, videotape, and DVDs talking about dreams and ideas that are never to be, and we can get them to the public almost instantly. If you look past the original disappointment, I like to think that audiences finding out about these works are going to be even more appreciative of what did make it out, and also how much work goes on behind the scenes for what actually gets through this incredible gauntlet. I don't have an easily thrown out statistic about exactly how long the average motion picture takes to make or what the average game development cycle is, but I think it's a lot longer than we often give it credit for. It can sit around for years, maybe broken down and reconstituted several times as people find new venues that might take their original idea and go with it. Sitting inside of Destiny, which is this beautiful game made by Bungie, is an even more beautiful game designed by the original writers that was going to be markedly different from what people experienced. Destiny is beautiful. The skyboxes, the character design, the look of it is really fascinating. But it had another layer to it. It had another way the world was going to exist, and our dreams of playing inside a true science fiction world that represented a civilization that had gone through multiple cycles and an unknown force from beyond the darkness and what that would mean, well, that didn't make the gauntlet. It's easy enough to sit on the outside and look at what ended up happening and believing that it was just one phrase, one meeting, one different outlook that meant the difference between the version in our heads and what came out. But that really shortchanges the expertise involved. Certainly, we can find many stories where different ideas were put forward and then fell apart, and it feels like an arbitrary decision. Buried inside the Infocom file cabinet collection that's on the Internet Archive are game ideas put forward by the original Infocom implementers about what they wanted to do next. Games involving politics and bizarre genres and approaching things with a much more intense approach and building games that let you build games within them. But once you realize that their development cycles were being reduced and reduced, and the amount of time they had for polish was being taken away, the amount of effort that was being put behind trying to market text adventure games at a time when graphics were starting to become the norm, well, you can point a lot of fingers, but I'm never going to be convinced that we're pointing in the right direction. The internet is rife with roughly sketched out ideas that were proposed as possible sequels to movies, different games that could have been made, certainly books that were never written, or projects that never came to fruition. And what I'm saying here is that while it's fun to think that there's a world where these sequels and ideas have gone on to live, there are reasons just beyond the pale as to why they never made it. There are so many moving parts in a project, whether it's solo or group, that leads to things just not working out. Even when Nintendo only chose 2 out of 6 games, and those games were doomed for working on that platform, there's an argument that they could have gone back into some sort of pool, been reworked, and maybe, just maybe, ended up in a different way in the future. In fact, I'm fairly sure many of the games and movies we've seen had that exact trajectory. Creations that failed in 1986 and then came roaring back in 1992. Or programs that were meant to be console games and became multiplayer online worlds. I'm sure that threat exists, and that if we interview people and ask them the right questions, they would say that very thing, that some of these ideas couldn't leave them. Even when they left the companies and the projects were canceled, the ideas lived with them. I have a bunch of ideas, things that I dreamed about in my teens when I thought computers were infinite and could do everything for me. Games that I thought about in my 20s, when I was fascinated with constructing worlds in text and graphics and trying to figure out how to make them richer and deeper. While at the game company after Psygnosis, I came up with a bunch of ideas, of which only a few made it onto paper. And then, of course, there's everything else I've wanted to do. Ideas for the Internet Archive, concepts about different environments, both physical and virtual, that I could be a part of. And not all of them are going to make it. Sometimes I worry, because I'm always full of ideas, but I'm not always full of energy. I find my energy works in a sine wave. There's times when I feel like there's nothing I couldn't throw 100% of myself at 24 hours a day. And other times when I'm lying flat in my bed at 2 in the afternoon and life is a noisy parade that's driving down the road and is going to leave me behind. The world is currently constructed for us to only talk about when we have our ideas working or when we in some form succeed, and not so much about failure and lost time and days. But I'll tell you, it exists for everyone. It exists for me, and I'm sure it exists for you. That's part of what makes the joy of being alive so exciting. Just having the energy and the moments when everything's in a rhythm and you're creating beautiful ideas and putting together all of the different parts of the structure, drawing the bones of the house, and then wondering if this house will survive all of the hurdles to come. Even if it doesn't, even if it results in a whispered piece of trivia, a story you bring up with your friends, or maybe even nothing. You were there, in that moment, with the ideas ahead of you, the road stretching infinitely, and in defiance of all of the goals-based world we seem to be building for ourselves. Those moments are the success in themselves. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Corey Thomas, Emilio Oliveira, Matt Reynolds, Ernie Hershey, and Michael Rubin, along with the hundreds of other supporters in Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If there's any advice I have for people out there, it's that if your project, whatever it is, ends up being canceled, please consider making a file folder with the name of your project, throwing everything you have in there, and putting it away. We, as audience, fans, and historians, have discovered that no matter how minor you may have felt your work was, no matter how sad you are that it never reached some sort of goal or completion, the applause, the appreciation, the depth of hunger for the knowledge of what you worked on will come. It'll take years. It'll take a very long time. But your file folder of memories, ideas, and sketches will be as like gold when you bring it out into the world in years hence. And I aim this advice to people at any stage in their career, beginning, middle, and nadir.